Hebrews 11, an interesting segment, and the outlining of this material is, just a sec, I'm going to get better organized here. Okay. The organization of this section is very interesting because we have gone through by faith so-and-so, by faith. We can start out with by faith. Abel, by faith, we have Enoch, by faith, we have Noah, by faith, Abraham. We've gone down through this as we wandered our way through. By faith, Isaac, we will see. By faith, Jacob. By faith, Joseph. We've worked our way down. But these people are named. And this segment that we're looking at in Hebrews 11:13, doesn't give a name, but gives, it's inclusive. He starts out here saying these all. And the these all is what we call a reference to these individuals who are in the immediate context. It's called a near demonstrative pronoun. And these all, the ones that this chapter is talking about, and this is very, very important to us. These all. And there's an advantage of being able to relate to what Scripture says how it relates as we look at it. It says these all here. Look over at verse 39. It says in 39, and these all, having obtained a good witness or good report, through faith, through the agency of faith, did not receive the promise. We have these all at the end of the chapter. We have it here in the middle of the chapter, and it's referring to all of these individuals. They had faith in individual promises, but they didn't have the privilege that we have. We have something better. And by understanding that, I've mentioned often, don't get proud because God chose you to be involved in this instead of them. What he provides for Old Testament saints is really good. But we just have something better. And I can't understand why I'm here. I can't understand why I'm in the dispensation of grace. I can't understand why he even saved me. It's just outside of the realm of my comprehension. But when I think about it, I hit the thank button real fast. Thank you, Father. Thank you, Father. Thank you, Father. Because when you think about that, and that's what Hebrews should kind of do to us. To see that things in Hebrews sometimes aren't ways in which we practice, but he's trying to teach us something by what others practiced. And some of those acts of faith are pretty magnificent. If the Lord tarries and permits, we will be looking at Abraham's sacrifice of Isaac, and that activity. The revelation given in Hebrews 11 helps us understand Genesis 22. There's a little extra here. It actually explains, in real simply, explains what Abraham's attitude was. Abraham could have actually slain Isaac by faith, because he believed that God said that Isaac was his seed. And that he would be the one who would proliferate his offspring. And he would have done it by faith, knowing that he would be resurrected, but he didn't. What a story. That's the problem when you read the context and keep reading it, isn't it? You keep finding all these little stories. I should say little stories. In that. And these are great acts of faith. Many times I'm not sure that we would volunteer to be in the sandals of some of these people. Because we would really be put to a kind of test that I'm not sure we'd want to have to face, would we? It was interesting being away. We were less than probably about 30 miles away from where the University of Washington marching band quit marching and rolled a bus. And on ice, evidently, when we came back from up there, we drove right by where that happened. We couldn't find any way to figure out where it happened. It just dumped this big old bus with a third of the band. And they ended up in area hospitals. Not, unfortunately, nobody was killed. It was a great thing that didn't happen. And there's a little bit of interesting things happened in that the Cougar Band learned how to play the Husky Fight song. And they played at the band, and they left the band section vacant because of what had happened in that event. And, yeah, you think, these poor kids, they look forward to that apple cup so much. They were in a nice, cozy elementary school or somewhere while they were over there in the snowstorm on the Palouse. And I wondered how many of them wondered what would happen. They said, had they been able to get them transported over, there were several that were pretty sore, I guess, from dumping this thing over. And I'm sure they wondered, here, I look forward to being able to play my senior year trombone in the band in Pullman at the Apple Cup. And all of a sudden that dream was dashed and they couldn't go. And it's kind of interesting. Some people, they had every confidence they were going to get there. When they got on that bus in Seattle and were ready to go across the state, they had no idea that they were going to experience, I'll have a life experience they will never forget, because it was a big event that didn't happen. But it's kind of interesting, you have people in the Old Testament who had huge events that were promised to them, and they had to by faith accept it. Because not everybody keeps their promises. In fact, I understand in the Old Testament how often promises were not kept by people. If you'd like to have a chat with Jacob, you'd find out about somebody who didn't keep promises. Remember, Jacob went over to Haran, and he went over there, and Laban said, oh, you can work for 6 years, and you can have Rachel for a wife. Was it 6 or 7 years? 7, I got my head. Anyway, so he works 7 years. What happens? Works 7 years and he gets his oldest daughter instead of the one he loved. And so he got a different woman. So he said, okay, you can have her, but you have to work 7 more years. 14 years of labor. That's a lot of work to get a lady. Only ended up with 2 of them. And these were brawling women. He should have gotten up on a corner of a rooftop and forgotten it. Why do I say that? Because that's a great story. When you realize all of those names except for Benjamin, all of those names are given in spite by 2 spiteful women who said, I'm up on you one. You know, look at Joseph. You know what Yosef means? Add. God has added to my kids, not yours. You go through all of those names, they're spiteful. Whether they were born by a wife or a female slave. What a conglomeration. But he had that opportunity, and he worked 7 more years. Then he wasn't going to get anything he earned. And so Laban says, okay, you can work 7 years. Did Laban send him off with a parade and a big banquet to say goodbye to his daughters and grandkids and everything else? No, he didn't. They sneaked out on Laban while he was out of town. And they were headed out, and we know that whole story. So 21 years, and there were promises made that weren't kept. Now, this is rather interesting when we start this out. These all died. Every one of these heroes died. There are traditional places where many of these heroes were buried. I mentioned, when did I mention? 2 weeks ago, I think. I have right now, to the end of this week, a picture of the mosque that sits on the site in Hebron, on the site of Machpelah. It's a mosque. It was not just a mosque. It had been a cooperative thing. For the site of the burial places of the patriarchs and patriarchesses, in that, just made up a new name, on that. but anyway, they had, I mean, had tomb is there. A very dangerous place to be for a non-Mohammedan. And so they all have graves somewhere. We don't, well, as far as David's being mentioned, later in this passage, you have David mentioned in the list in 32. I have been to a tomb of David. Now you notice how I said it. A tomb of David in Jerusalem. David's tomb is right next door to the upper room. Another tourist trap. And it's really interesting. You know, the traditional upper room is in the same building, exactly where David's tomb is supposedly housed. And you go into those. What I know about that, that's what I said. When I was in Israel, I said, you know, I know one thing. It didn't happen here. It wasn't here. And I was talking to these three guys from New York City, fun guys, they were believers, they were East Indian, and got to talk to them. And when I talked to them, they'd say, what do you think about this? I said, well, I know that this is not where this happened. It's just tradition. Somebody was able, some church that has certain initials, found property. I shouldn't say there were other churches. Greek Orthodox did it. Russian Orthodox did it, as well as the Roman Church. And they would put a cathedral or put some kind of big markers up on these places as traditional sites. I mean, they have traditional sites where Jesus washed the disciples' feet. Isn't that, you know, it's really just superstitious all. But these all died. That's what it says right here in front. They died. They were given promises, but they did not get the promises. They died before they got it. They believed that they had these promises. They did not receive the promises, though they had faith. If God promises, it will happen. It may happen thousands of years later, but it will happen without a question. I really believe that many of these promises would have been delivered had Israel not behaved the way they did at Mount Sinai. Because at Sinai they said, we don't want to believe the promises, we want to earn something from God. And he said, okay, I'll let you earn it, and prove they couldn't. And so we understand that there. But they had not received the promises. But it says they see them at a great distance. A long ways away, there are the promises. At a great distance, and that's an interesting word that we'll be crossing. And so they died with a promised land. They lived in the promised land. Remember how they lived? They lived in tents. They were looking for a city, just like Ur, just like Haran. that had foundations, whose builder and maker was God. And they lived in tents because God did not give them the promised land. They lived on the promised land, but they were still strangers and pilgrims. Isn't it kind of fun when you realize they were strangers and pilgrims, and I love it that I'm a stranger and a pilgrim here. Because I'm not going to the promised land, I'm going to heaven. And that's promised. These heroes of their acts of faith are looking for a fatherland. We're going to look at an interesting verb in verse 16. It's only found three times in the New Testament. And it's a verb that has the idea they kept stretching out and trying to reach this. They were stretching out and trying to grasp it, and they didn't get it. And so we'll talk about this thing of stretching out. And they were seeking an inheritance. I keep reading fatherland. There's a good reason for that. Because fatherland means it's an inherited land of the fathers. It belongs to the family. And so it's translated, I mean, it's the word father in a special form that means that they're looking for something that is promised, which will provide an inheritance for heirs. And it's kind of interesting when we understand that. We think, if you look at Israel, it's not a very big piece of land. You know, it's not much bigger than New Hampshire. And it's all scattered and chopped up, and it's interesting. The promised land could handle a huge number of people if it was cultivatable. From the Euphrates to the Nile. And it will be cultivatable in a day when they get the promise. And we're not going to talk about that in this segment. It would be fun to do it, but we're not going to. And they were looking for an inheritance. And so what they did, they left the land. And we're going to talk a little bit about it. When they talked about a place where they had lived, they had lived in Ur of the Chaldees. They left Ur of the Chaldees. Taken by Terah, Abram's father, to Haran. Now Haran is up the Tigris-Euphrates Valley, and so it's from the lower Tigris-Euphrates Valley up to the very upper parts of the Tigris-Euphrates Valley. And so they went to Haran. They lived there, and we talked about how long. We played with dates in this series so far. We don't know exactly how long, but at least 20 years. And we do know that when Abram left, he was 75 years old. It's just a kid. Everybody knows that. Right, Dan? 75 years old, you're just a kid. In that matter. And so they left. Abram lived another 100 years after that, which is interesting. And if they had an opportunity to return to their old homeland, the question was it worth it? And we're going to see a verse in here that says, if they were given an opportunity, if they were given a right time to go back to the homeland, whether it was Ur or Haran, the thing is, they wouldn't have. Because they believed God. And so when they went over there and left, they left with that one little flicker of faith that they would have the homeland. They would have a permanency, and it would be a place where they would be able to pass on to heirs, and in that matter. And so they hoped for a better fatherland and an earthly city, and we've seen that as we've related to it. So let's take a moment. I mean, let's move down through. We got four verses we want to look at today. And let's see how quickly we can move through them. These all having died by faith. These all. I have not been reading commentaries like I had anticipated. Since I teach in some of these books, sometimes when I do a series, I will follow along in about 25 commentaries, so I'm familiar with what they do. That was my intent when I started this series. I started to read them, and I thought we were reading different books in some of those. That is, the Hebrews I was reading wasn't the Hebrews they were reading. Because of the same problem with misapplication of things to the church that didn't apply to the church, and they didn't understand it. And I'm not that smart. It just wasn't there. And when I got to this verse, I did look it up in a couple of commentaries, see what they had to say. And now I looked at one commentary, and it said, these all refer to the church. I thought, what in the world is wrong with you guys? In fact, that very commentary happened to see the fact that in 1139, okay, that's my little problem here. I got the right verse in my notes, but I don't have the right street number. I mean, he said, these all in both the beginning and the end refer to all of us. We're part of this. And I thought, boy, you had to do some fancy footwork, and he did. And he happens to be someone that I looked at because I thought he would do better. These all, that's just a simple grammatical piece. These are near demonstrative. That is, it means those are in the immediate context before and after. And so it starts here in verse 13, and when you get down to 39, it goes back, these all. And so it says, these all died. All of those listed in the context, it says they died according to faith. They died at a point in time. They had funerals for them at a point in time. Some of them were put to death. You can see that in some of these actions later, where they were martyred, as it were. But they really, really died and really are dead. And so they all died, not having received, not having obtained. I would rather translate it obtained than receive. They had not obtained the promises. The word obtained is a word in a middle voice, which has the idea they didn't get it for themselves. It didn't happen yet. They died and they hadn't gotten it for themselves. They hadn't obtained it for themselves. But having seen them afar off, and you can see why I said that in the intro, that is, they could see them off at the distance, and by faith, they took that which was off on the far horizon and made a reality of it. They gave substance to the things hoped for. Little did they know that they would have to pass through death before they could receive it in a resurrection. They didn't understand resurrection like they could have. And so they saw them, and it says, and it's interesting, we have participles all over the place here. Having died is a participle. Then it goes on, and were persuaded. I'm reading the King James. In this, and they saw him, and they were persuaded and embraced him and confessed. We have three participles. The word persuaded happens to be a verb that means they could see. Let's see, seeing them. I left that out. That's a participle. They were persuaded. It's the word for welcome. They greeted them. They were so eager to participate in these promises. They welcomed, they acclaimed them. And I like the word greet. That is the word that is at the end of many of Paul's letters when he says, greet so-and-so. Greet so-and-so. Greet one another with a holy kiss. It's that word that occurs. And so it's the idea of greeting. When you greet someone, you're doing it with a little bit of enthusiasm. And so they understood the promises by faith, and they were reaching out to get them, and they were welcoming them. And that's the reason they wandered around the promised land in tents, waiting for God to give them the city, give them a place. And so they greeted them. They were so certain they were there. And then it says, embraced them and they confessed. The word confess is a word that's very familiar because I hope, use it all the time. Because whenever we sin, what do? We hamalagel, we confess. And this is the word that's here. At the point in time of death, they confessed. It always tie back to that dying. It's an active voice. They were at active confession. What did they confess? They confessed that they were aliens or foreigners. They were not citizens. We have two different words here, you can see. They confessed that they were strangers and pilgrims. In other words, in both cases, the word alien could be used. One is an alien that is just absolutely foreign. The other one is an alien who lives alongside someone in a strange place. And it's a temporary resident in this upon earth. Upon that earth, the earth, the geography, that piece of property, they were seen as pilgrims and strangers upon the earth. And so they were looking for an inheritance on planet earth. And they saw they were in the condition they were in, though they were on the land that was theirs, that God needed to provide for them because he promised it. And so they understood that. And then it's interesting in verse 14, by faith they were looking for a fatherland. For they that say such things declare plainly that they seek a fatherland. By faith. These individuals, they say such things, they make an obvious statement. They say are saying these things, and it ties to the verb to plainly declare. Their intent is a clear explanation. There's no reticence in saying this. This word means to know, to explain, to exhibit, to inform. It's translated declare plainly. They are saying this is the facts. This is exactly what we're looking for. And we will do tents until God gives us a city with foundation. When Abram died, he was a tent dweller. And we went through the tent situation a couple of weeks ago. And so they were looking. They were anticipating in that matter. Looking for this fatherland, a native land, a homeland, a land for a family inheritance. That had been promised to Abraham. We could go back and look at the land promised to Abraham in Genesis 15 in the first Abrahamic covenant. And he promised the land from the river Euphrates to the river of Egypt, that is the river Nile. That's a lot of land. If somebody donated that land to me, I would have trouble. Because most of it is kind of scruffy land right now. I don't think I'd want the Sinai Peninsula. I mean, that's kind of scruffy. You get on the other side of the Red Sea, that land is a little bit more valuable, but you have to go inland even more toward the Nile. And it just happens that the land of Goshen is on the east side of the Nile. That is on the side from the Abraham. And so there's some fertile land and some is not. The land that is called Israel today was considered subvalued land. It was land that was not worthless, but it was not super great. You do not irrigate crops with water from the Dead Sea. And that is the big body of water over there. That's over-fertilizing it. It'd kill everything. It would burn everything. The Jordan River is not a big, big river. It's a small river. But today, the land of Israel has water, and there's always a battle for water over there. But there's water for Jordan, and there's water for parts of Syria, and there's water for the land of Israel. And a big part of that's because Israel knows how to handle water. They have a science for growing crops. Have you ever eaten an Israeli orange or an Israeli grapefruit? Once in a while you'll see them. And they practically feed citrus to Europe. There's so much of it that they're able to produce. Have you ever had an Israeli banana? You say, what? Bananas from Israel? Go to Europe, you'll probably find them. You go over there, it's really funny to look at their banana crops. It's really crazy. Because these short banana trees, probably less than 10 feet tall, and you couldn't see the bananas because they were covered in blue plastic. And you thought, well, this is weird. Why do they go and put all their bunches of bananas in blue plastic? Well, it does a couple of things. It keeps some of the insects out. But the other thing, it causes them to ripen uniformly. And so those blue bags on them. And it just plain looks weird if you haven't ever seen it before. But that's what it does. They have science that has made some of the land productive. But there's a lot of land that isn't. The Judean desert. From Jerusalem, you look toward the Dead Sea, you're looking out over the desert. If you look north and west, you see northern reaches of the Judean desert. I would love to have opportunity to go to a couple of monasteries up in that north side. St. George's Monastery. I just carved out a rock, and it's just it's so interesting to see it. I'd like to see what's inside of those places. And so they're seeking a fatherland, and in essence, the fatherland, they were hoping for a city that would be productive. In Woodburn, we did last year, we did some geography in the year before. We did quarters on the city of Jerusalem. The city of Jerusalem doesn't cover much more, if that, even that, the square mileage of Gettysburg. It's not a very big city. The walled city of Jerusalem doesn't cover that. The old city. Now it's a lot bigger, but you go through the walls, and the funny thing is people get lost in the city of Jerusalem. And there are probably good reasons for that. Not a very big place. Jerusalem, they tried to make it the city, and it, how many times did it get torn down besides 586 BC and 70 AD in that? And so they were seeking a fatherland. If you study the history of Israel, you'll find that there are interesting divisions in Israel. One that we know of well is Zionism. Zionism was a secular government that the first president of Israel was a Zionist named Weizmann. The prime minister was David Ben-Gurion. These were secularists. Ben-Gurion was an outright socialist. Israel has a government that is a socialistic government, probably one of the few semi-successful socialist governments in the world. And so what happened, these Zionists wanted a what? A patria, a fatherland. They wanted a fatherland. And that was their goal. They didn't want God to have anything to do with it. And so when they went and started to move in the late 1800s, they found that there were some Orthodox Jews that were inhabiting spots in the land of Israel. They also were looking for a fatherland. They also anticipated that happening. Orthodox Jews insist, if they can afford it, on being buried over on the Mount of Olives in that area. And so they have big cemeteries that are very different than ours on the Mount of Olives. Why? Because when Messiah comes through the eastern gate of the temple, they want to be there for the resurrection. That's what they want. They're looking for a patria, a fatherland. And so they will take people's remains over there and bury them from all over the world. And it's very expensive to have that happen as they were looking for it. Now, it's kind of interesting when you read verse 15. This attitude and this matter of looking for the fatherland, it says, and truly, and when it says, I need to translate, let me get my translation, I prefer that. The obscure and Mendez, a comparison, so my outline reflected, but my translation does it as well. And so it says, if on the one hand they continually remembered, they had an ongoing memory of back where they'd been. It's an imperfect tense verb. They remembered the land from which they came out. I supplied the land in italics from which they came from at that point in time in the past. They may have continually had time or opportunity to return. Now it sounds like, oh, maybe they were getting questions about the promises. It's not really what it says. It says that they believed the promises and didn't, when they had opportunity, didn't go back. Now when it talks about patria and going back, what were they talking about? I do not believe that I would like to live in Haran. Have you ever lived in a place you really didn't like? You didn't want? You were not happy being there? I remember. I didn't like to breathe dust. I didn't like having dust in my teeth, and I had grit in my teeth. And the water often had dirt in it because of the dust in the air. I liked the smell of pine trees. I didn't like sagebrush. I have not determined whether I have any kind of allergy to sagebrush. We had quite a discussion of that this week. About whether we had allergies or what. Because when we go to Nevada, we were right in the middle of sagebrush. And, it was on property. In fact, David was talking about going out with an hatchet and chopping out the sagebrush on some of my in-laws' property. And, his grandma paid him and he didn't want to take it because he was just doing it to help her. And she insisted, so we had quite a discussion about it. But he said, every time I went to Nevada, he said, for 3 days I had head congestion and runny nose and all of that. And I thought, that sagebrush, and sometimes the air is bad in that matter. So that was not pleasant. I didn't, I mean, it wasn't the sagebrush that got me so much when we go to Nevada, but it was sometimes, there was another aroma that was there, and I couldn't stand it. That is called roll your own cigarettes. And I would, the cigarette smoke would just get me and drive me. I mean, I thought I had, I mean, I was sure I had, it might have been an allergy in my head, but smelling cigarette smoke all the time we'd be in Nevada, we just, I got overwhelmed by it. Amazing, my mother-in-law didn't die from secondhand smoke, in that, she didn't. In that. But in this matter, I mean, here, they were in places that I wouldn't want to live. Heron is a place, if you look at the pictures of Heron in that part of the Tigris-Euphrates Valley, it's up in the desert edge. Yeah, there were caravan routes that came through there. But it was because it was where you had easier access to go on down the other side of the Fertile Crescent. And so I wouldn't have wanted to go back there. I don't know about Ur. My thoughts about Ur of the Chaldees always are filtered through Babylon, through Babylon. It wasn't always that way, though it was the Tigris-Euphrates Valley was very fertile and very humid. And so they had that opportunity to go back to where they'd been. And so and 15 tells us the story. But on the other hand, they continually remembered the land which they came out of, but they didn't. They always said, that was home. There's always a place that's home. I know when I was a kid growing up in Eastern Washington, that was never home for me. Because I had memories of the Sierra Nevada Mountains and the pine forests. I thought about that a lot recently, because all it would have taken would be some kind of a problem like that in Paradise down where we were, and it would have wiped out another town. And it wasn't because of underbrush, it was because big heavy pine trees that were all around. And once you get the fires up in that, it was really bad. And I always wanted to go back there. And I used to think if I were to retire, I would be tempted to go back there because I had such fond memories. I left there when I was in second grade. And it was always home for some weird thing. You wouldn't do that, but I do. Now, where were you growing up? And some of those places say, oh, I just love to be back there. Some people say it's not a good idea to go back there to work, but you'd be disappointed. And so it said they were continually mindful of that country and where they came out. And so if they had opportunity, they might have returned. Now let's look at, move on. If on the one hand they continually remember, now on the other hand, they long for a better country. In verse 16, the word desire is not epithumia. That is, it's not the word for lust for here. It's desire is not the best way to translate this word in this verse. I am determined to drop this. I'm going to just dump it off the side and take care of that. But this, the idea of verse 16 is they stretch out for it to grasp. That's the idea. The word, if you look it up in some lexicons, they're going to say aspire, but it's the idea of stretching out to grasp or to seize something. It can be a good thing and it can be a bad thing. He says, but now they desire. The now is at the time that Paul wrote this book. He's not talking about 2018. He's talking about when Paul wrote the book. They were desiring a better country or a better homeland. Let's put a homeland in there. It works better. That is a heavenly homeland. A homeland that comes from heaven. is sourced out of heaven. They stretch out. Now let's take a moment and do, I told you here three times. Let's look at those times. Two, the other two are found in 1 Timothy. The first is a good thing. That is in 1 Timothy 3:1, which is a section that describes the office of bishop. And it says in 3:1, this is the true saying, that if a man desire the office of bishop, he desires a good work. And then he goes on and talks about qualification. You see the word is translated desire here again. If a man stretches out, he stretches out for a good work. And you have the first word there, that he aspires to the office of bishop. The second term it says desires is a word that means to lust for. So you have stretch out for and then lust. I have a strong desire for. So here you have the two together. They're different. There's a different flavor. And so if he stretches out for it, those are two elements for someone who wants to hold the office of bishop. You have to stretch out for it, reach out for it, reach out to seize it, and so aspire to it. And then you can have that strong desire. We've had instances where someone said, I don't lust for the office. Understanding they understood the Greek here. But they never stretched out for it in the first place. Which is kind of why we exist here. That's why this banner is up here. We want to give somebody something to aspire to stretch out for, to try to grasp and get a hold of it, to represent it. We are oddballs here. And when I say we're oddballs, I look at what's going on in Christendom today, and there are so many people that are getting nothing on it. I have an ongoing situation where I hear rather often about a pastor who is trained by books. I don't knock him for his effort and his diligence, but he's become an authority without having authority. I mean, he doesn't have it. He's a building contractor, and he has a church, and he's a conglomeration of what he believes in the poor people. I don't know whether they know which way is up. He's got enough of a program to hold people. And that happens, there's happening all over. I'm just really sad, and I don't like to hear about what's going on. So this is a reaching out, stretching out. I can just see that stretch. Trying to get a hold of something and knowing it's there in reach, but you have to grasp it. And that's the idea. Now we have the other side of it, which is a more negative thing in chapter 6 of 1 Timothy, and that's 6:10. For the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. The love of money. Now, let's be careful when we read that, because it does say love in the King James. And what it actually is a fondness of silver. Not agape love, it's the fondness of. And the word money is the word silver. In fact, it's philaguria. And so you have those two together. It's not like Philadelphia. It's fondness for money. Which, while some coveted after, and the word, I didn't see that. Anyway. The word coveted after, they've reached out for it. They've stretched for it. They keep stretching and stretching. You know, people are never satisfied. You know, the rich man who said, how much more would you need to be satisfied? A little more. A little more. And that is something that, I mean, this is the idea. Coveted is not a good translation here. He's stretching out to grasp it. They have erred from the faith. This is what happens to Christians who function in that manner. They have been deviated, have deviated from the faith, and pierced themselves through with many sorrows. But thou, O man of God, flee these things. Run from them. All you live for is silver or money. Run is the idea here in this matter. So let's go back to verse 16. These are individuals. They were stretching out for this better homeland, better fatherland. And so, wherefore, God is not ashamed to call them what? To be called their God. He's not ashamed. They're reaching out for the promises. They're God. There's no distinction in which person is here in this matter, though it does say the God of them is to be called. It's Anarchus there in the second occurrence. For he has prepared for them, or for their advantage, a city. Now it's kind of an interesting transition here. There was a city that had foundations, as mentioned earlier. Here it just says he's prepared for them a city. It's interesting. It's talking about a city which will have its inhabitants described in the next chapter. And this is a heavenly city, which is a new Jerusalem. Hebrews 12 tells us that. Whereas these individuals, there will be a city which will be for their advantage. You have to know a whole lot of eschatology to understand how that's going to be their advantage. They're going to be on earth. The new Jerusalem is going to be over the earth. And so he's made a city for them. It's for their advantage. It's what's called the deity of advantage. So it's interesting. He says all of these people, by faith, they are looking for something with substance. Faith is the substance of things hoped for. And they're looking for it, but they're all dead. They're all dead. They may or may not have tombs or grave markers. They're all dead, but they anticipate receiving that promise someday. Why? Because the one who promised is absolutely 100% reliable. When my grandmother died, and she was, what was she, 97, I think it was. When she died at her funeral, some of her friends said, I can't believe that Mady died. Her name was M-A-D-I-E. But Mady died. Because she wasn't going to die, because the Lord was going to come back first. And they understood that she had such an eagerness for the coming of the Lord that when she was 97 years old, they said, I can't believe it. That the Lord hadn't come back and she was still alive. That tells you something here about a lady of faith. She really did believe that that was going to happen. And that governed her life. It was an interesting thing. Interestingly enough, it's not, the gene pool doesn't provide that. It's just a relationship to God. So, these all died according to faith. Now we pick up and we'll come back to Abraham for round three in Genesis 22. There are three verses there that we'll relate to, Lord willing, next week. Father, may you continue to bless us and guide us as we think on these truths and the things that are so much in part of this section of scripture. We thank you that it enhances our own faith. Because the same God made promises that are totally different. And those promises will come to be. And we're appreciative of the fact we have better promises. And those promises lap right into the lives we live today. The lives that saints lived from the day of Pentecost on, we appreciate it. And may you bless us as we think on these things. We're thankful for these great examples of acts of faith. In Christ's name, amen.